Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It's the Fan of State. Our numero dos gets underway now. Welcome in, dudes and dudettes. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo with you here on a Thursday morning. Big show lined up today. We got Lulu Kesson at 8 o'clock to talk Gamecock athletics. We got Rashad Beard set to talk about the Carolina Panthers at 8:40. 9 o'clock, Fight Club with the great one, Lonzo, your home for combat sports in the upstate. And at 9:20, Hayton Ass Mario going to join the show to break down the NFL's divisional round with us. That's where we're going. That's where we're headed. But now we are here, 7:01 in the morning. You got 58 minutes and 32 seconds to get on in to work, to sit down at the computer, to type in that obnoxiously, unnecessarily long password, to get into that email, to just fire back at all those passive-aggressive ones you got last night and ignored. And then you're going to stand up, you're going to walk down that long hallway, you're going to duck into the break room, you're going to stand around the water cooler and talk sports with your coworkers. And if you're going to do that, you're going to need this. It's the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports this lovely upstate Thursday a.m. Let us dive right in with item number one. The 2025 College Football Hall of Fame class has officially been officialized. It was announced yesterday that you are going to end up having Nick Saban in. Now, we knew that from last week. They announced that on College Game Day. We also now know that Urban Meyer is going in, Michael Vick is going in, and Michael Strahan are going in. Michael Strahan, the only member on this list who has threatened to kick my ass. He also offered it, or not offered, he also bought me a beer afterwards because he realized I know ball. But Michael Strahan, only guy that offered to kick my ass in public.
Or he was worried that you would go public with his treatment of you and, you know.
No, I think he was worried he was going to catch his hands as well.
Is that what it was?
I think he was worried he was going to get that smoke. Is why he looked at me and he was like, oh, never mind. My bad, dog. I didn't see you before I started throwing it around a little bit. And I said, that's right, Michael Strahan. Buy me a beer. Saban retired last year as the NCAA's active leader in wins with 292-71-1 over 28 seasons at Toledo, Michigan State, LSU, and Alabama. His 7 national championships, 1 at LSU, 6 at Alabama, is the most by an FBS coach. Urban Meyer goes in with a record of 187-32, 3 natties over 17 seasons at Bowling Green, Utah, Florida, and Ohio State. He won 22 of 24 games at Utah before he took over at Florida, where he won national titles in 06 and 08. Moved to Ohio State in 2012, you know, those family issues and whatnot, and won his 3rd national championship in 2014. Went 83-9 over 7 seasons in Columbus. Michael Vick led the Hokies to a 22-2 record in the 1999 National Championship game, where he ended up losing to Florida State, went on to have a 13-year career in the NFL. Michael Strahan played for Texas Southern from 1989 to 1992, recorded 41.5 sacks in 4 seasons before he went on to play 15 for the New York Giants and was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2014. Terry Henratty, 24-4-2 as a quarterback at Notre Dame back in the late 60s, was also selected, helped the 66 team to a share of the national championship, and joins teammates Jim Lynch, Alan Page, and Joe Theismann in the Hall of Fame. Amongst other picks that have been officialized, the 2012 Doak Walker Award for nation's best running back went to Wisconsin's Monty Ball. The year before that, he had tied Barry Sanders' NCAA record of 39 touchdowns in a single season, finished his career with 5,140 rushing yards, averaging 104.9 yards per game and 77 rushing touchdowns. Monty Ball is one of those players, though, like you've seen the meme online about how dudes can just sit around and name random football players and they don't even have to talk. They just have to say the name and everybody has a great time. Monty Ball's one of those cats. Like, I could sit here and somebody goes Monty Ball and I'd be like, oh yeah, yeah. That dude was a hoss, man. He was an absolute dog. Monty Ball's one of those guys that probably like never gets mentioned in the conversations of the most enjoyable players to watch. But that dude was a battering ram with cleats on.
So I remember the name, but I don't remember watching him play.
Oh, Monty Ball was a hoss.
It doesn't mean I didn't. I just don't remember watching.
That was a long time ago. It's 12 years ago. I mean, you were what, 22? At that point?
That's funny.
Greg Carr of Auburn is in. Blake Elliott of St. John's. Greg Esslinger of Minnesota. Graham Harrell's another one of those guys. It's like, damn. It's the last time I heard Graham Harrell's name. John Henderson of Tennessee. Michael Huff of Texas. Jim Kleinsasser of North Dakota. Alex Mack of California. Terrence Metcalf of Mississippi. Oregon's Haloti Ngata. That's another one of these guys.
It's Haloti Ngata.
Whatever.
I'm just, you know.
I believe I've heard him on the broadcast referred to as Ngata, but okay. Steve Slayton of West Virginia, Darren Smith of Miami, Dennis Thurman of SoCal, and Ryan Yarbrough of Wyoming are also in the coaching category alongside Nick Saban. Larry Blakeney of Troy. I used to interview Larry Blakeney back when he was at Troy way back in the day. Larry Korver of Northwestern College. Blakeney guided the Trojans from D2 to the FBS back in 91, stayed there till 2014, and remains the Sun Belt Conference's all-time wins leader with a 178-113-1 record. 2025 class inducted coming up in December of this year at an awards dinner in Las Vegas. The Hall of Fame in Atlanta is where they shall be memorialized forever. Have you gotten over there yet? I am ashamed to say I'm this close to Atlanta and I have not gone to the College Football Hall of Fame yet.
I haven't been to Atlanta in a couple of decades.
Probably. I really like Atlanta.
So I went to Six Flags, which is past Atlanta, and I went to see the Royal Rumble like a long, long time ago. But because of the amount of traffic and all that kind of stuff, I know you've been to a Braves game. It's just I don't really have any reason to go over there.
I would love
to go there Monday, but you know.
I really like downtown Atlanta. It is absolutely trafficy. You got to build that into the plan. I really like downtown Atlanta. I'm embarrassed. And here's the thing. When we went over there for the bachelor party, we were like a minute and a half long walk away from the College Football Hall of Fame, and we didn't go. Now, in fairness, we gave ourselves some pretty good reasons not to go. But we didn't go. I got to get over there. Maybe that might be a summertime trip. I might have to pop over there on a Sunday afternoon this summer. We'll see. Item number 2. Sorry, what were you going to say?
I threw that right at you. It's all right.
Vanderbilt was up by a couple, but in trouble after AJ Hoggard turned the ball over and committed a flagrant foul against South Carolina, gave the Gamecocks two shots in the ball last night. Colin Murray-Boyles made both free throws. The game was tied up, but then Vanderbilt's Devin McLaughlin came through when Vandy needed him the most last night. First, blocked a Murray-Boyles shot, forcing a shot clock violation on the Gamecocks. On the Commodores' ensuing possession, he grabbed the offensive rebound on Hoggard's missed jumper, got the putback, drew the foul, made the free throw, and secured a 66-63 win with 0.6 seconds left at Memorial Gymnasium. The South Carolina Gamecocks fall on the road at Vanderbilt. McLaughlin said, quote, "That's just how we drew it up." For the Gamecocks, Colin Murray-Boyles once again up towards the top of the score sheet when it was all said and done. Had a couple of opportunities down the stretch to knock down a couple of clutch jumpers. It just did not go the Gamecocks' way. Colin Murray-Boyles had 14 on 6 of 10 from the floor, pulled down 9 boards as well. Morris Ugosuke had 20 points on 6 of 8 from the floor, was 3 of 4 from 3, obviously pressed into service due to some of the injuries for the Gamecocks. At this point in the season, I'll say this. The team has obviously been banged up in a couple of different positions and have lost some guys for extended periods of time. This team is just not what last year's team was for Lamont Paris. It's a fine team. You're 10-7, but you're 0-4 in conference. This year, to me, is about getting right. It's just you had a good run with GG. You've got some dogs down there like Nick Pringle. But when Pringle finished, here's the other part, and this is where I am going to give Lamont Paris a little pushback. How do I have a team that lifts 45 field goal attempts and Nick Pringle has 2 of them? That ain't it. Nick Pringle, I'm not going to say won you that Clemson game that you got the upset of the Tigers at home, but he did. How do I have a Gamecock team that has 45 free throws? By the way, a Gamecock team missing some starters that has 45 field goals and Nick Pringle has 2 of them. I said 2 weeks ago, I'm like, yo, this team could be interesting when they get fully healthy. If they haven't then taken themselves out of it at that point, when they get healthy, they could be kind of interesting. But what else did I say? Got to play inside out. Got to play inside out. Got to play from the big man out to the wing, not from the wing into the big man. Go to Nick Pringle. Let him do his thing. He has, in 23 minutes last night, he has 2 field goal attempts. 2 field goal attempts. That's just not it. South Carolina shot just over 42%. Held Vanderbilt to just at 41%. The problem is in two numbers. Number one, South Carolina had 45 field goal attempts. Vandy had 56. More shots on more possessions equals more buckets. But it was the big number that blew me off the page. South Carolina forced 12 turnovers from the Vanderbilt Commodores and gave the ball away 25 times. 25 times. You lost by 3. You gave it away 25 times. It's reckless basketball. It is a team that went, oh, we're dinged up. We're injured. We can't get Pringle going, so we're just going to have to press. We're going to have to play above our level, and you were reckless with the basketball.
I saw less turnovers than that in a 6-year-old basketball game last night.
25 turnovers is that's a nasty number, dude. That's a nasty number. That's an unacceptable number is what it is. Like, jokes aside, that's an unacceptable number of turnovers for a D1 program. Let's get to item number 3. We'll talk about this later on in the show because I do find this interesting. Since January of last year, the Charlotte Hornets have now accumulated 2 first-round picks and 8 second-round picks via trade. They did 2 more yesterday. They traded center Nick Richards and a second-round draft pick to the Suns for 4 Josh Okogie and 3 second-round picks. So they effectively pick up a developmental forward and two more second-round picks. They also sent a 2025 second-rounder out to Phoenix, which traded a 2026 Nugget second-rounder and two 2031 second-rounders to Charlotte. The Suns rank last in the NBA in points from their starting center, so they get a seven-footer who's averaging 9 and 7.5 boards across 21 games, five of them with the Hornets so far. Excuse me, five seasons with the Hornets so far. Richards has been pretty good for Charlotte. So they send him out there to Phoenix, who desperately needs it. They get a few second-round picks out of the deal. The Hornets have accumulated, as we mentioned, two first-rounders and eight second-rounders, most of which are next year, a few spread out now all the way till 2031. This team, the Charlotte Hornets, this team has fully embraced mortgaging now, or excuse me, grabbing picks to play for the future at the cost of being really bad right now, right? Like, whatever's the opposite of mortgaging the future for now, whatever the investing in the future by stinking right now is all this comes down to. Here's the thing. I don't really hate it, okay? I don't really hate it. The roster you've built right now is a number of pieces away from being competitive. And Nick Richards is a productive, good big man on the inside, but he's not a dude that's carrying you, right? Like, he's not going to be the centerpiece, the focal piece. So you end up getting effectively two more first-rounders out of the deal for a guy who is on a contract that wasn't going to be renewed anyway. I think it's a good trade. I am here for the long-haul rebuild of the Charlotte Hornets. Lonzo, remind me, what year is it right now?
It's 2025.
Okay, that's what I thought. You're trading for second-round picks in 2031? 2031. I'm not yet 40. When this pick comes to fruition, I'll be halfway through my 40s. I'm good with the concept of a long-term rebuild.
I don't want to talk about how old I'll be then.
Lonzo will likely be having to do like those hand bike things at that point.
Well, I'll be retirement age, so I mean, or close to it.
This is a long, long, long bleeping concept for the Charlotte Hornets. And I don't have an issue with the rebuild. I don't have an issue with the rebuild. But if I am pushing off guys now for 2 second-round picks in 2031, as a Hornets fan, am I expected to be on team rebuild until 2033? Is that when you're telling me the next time you're going to be good is?
Have they been rebuilding since they got the name back? Or even before that?
I mean, yeah. I would say so. I don't know, man. This is really interesting. This is really interesting in that it is one thing to embrace the rebuild. I'm a Saints fan. I have to embrace the rebuild now. We ain't doing a damn thing else but rebuilding for like the next couple years. But man, embracing a rebuild that the team is basically telling you is going to take into the mid-2030s? Why am I paying any attention? And as a media dude, right? Like, why am I going to pay any attention to this team? Why am I going to pay any attention to a team that's making picks? And again, I get it. You can only get what you can get for a guy. But why am I going to pay attention to a team that just committed to a rebuild that they have now said is effectively lasting till 2032? It just feels like it's not worth my time, of which I don't have a lot left. Because I'm turning... Okay. Take a break. Come back here in just a minute. Let's get some college football in here. Start looking towards the Natty on Monday. The Rob Brown Show. Rob, Lonzo, and you.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's the fan upstate. Ohio State, Notre Dame, 7:30 p.m. Monday night. We begin 60 minutes of football action to determine the 2024-25 college football national champions.
What time do you think actual kickoff will be?
Like 8:45. No, I don't think so. They're starting the coverage, I believe, around 6. So I would bet the kickoff is probably around 7:45.
If it is, there's a chance that I could watch the entire thing before going to
it. All right.
We also don't work Monday, which means I will not have gotten up at...
True, but you will have to on Tuesday. So my question is, what is the latest they could start this game that you would guarantee me you're watching till the final whistle to find out if your team's natties?
Probably right now. I mean, the way it is right now. I mean, if they go, if kickoff's right around 8, man, it's still.
Assuming with an extended halftime, which I'm assuming there will be, we'll have a halftime show or whatever. Assuming an extended halftime, I suspect this game is roughly 3 hours 15 minutes. Is like 10:30 your cutoff? Like if the game ends after 10:30, I'll see the finish in the morning?
Yeah, because if I go beyond 10:30 and 10:30 is pushing it for me, I probably don't make it through the show. And it's just physically and other problems where I'm not sleeping well. I need a certain amount of hours to hopefully squeeze in enough to survive the next day. And it's not a matter of want to, because when I was younger, I could have did it. I mean, I talked about Royal Rumble earlier. We went to Atlanta, came back 2 hours later, was doing I was running the morning show. I mean, so yeah, I mean, I could do it.
Back then, anyway. I mean, my team's not even in this. I'm watching it. I don't care if they started at 11 o'clock. All right, I gotta watch it. I was just curious as to where Lonzo would land on this. All right.
Are you going to call me lesser of
no,
a fan
not at all.
Because of it?
Not at all. Because I
some
know.
Some people would.
Because I know when I mean, am I going to call you that? No. Do I believe it? I don't know. Maybe a little.
You do. That's
maybe
fine.
A little.
That's fine.
Maybe a little.
You know, different people. And I guarantee you my wife will be staying up and watching the entire thing. And
she just don't have to get up at 3:15 in the morning.
Right. And probably more than likely, I should just watch the whole thing, because if she stays up, she can't be quiet if there's a touchdown or something. Even though she's on the other side of the house, I will hear it.
Oh man, I don't know.
I want to stay up for the entire thing, and it's really going to depend on what time kickoff is. If both teams decide to run the ball a lot, that clock's going to go a lot faster. I mean, a lot of things factor in.
I know that I'm staying up to watch this whole game. And if it goes till 11 p.m., 10:30, 11 p.m., I'm going to hate myself the next day.
Also, if it's one-sided either way going into the fourth quarter, I mean...
See, I'm watching it anyway because we've watched 21-point leads evaporate, right? I mean, there was a story famously of Bill Belichick talking about how Arthur Smith was on the sideline of that 28-3 Super Bowl dancing around like he just won the lottery. And then, of course, the Patriots came back and erased the 25-point deficit in the second half to win the game. I'm watching till the end, no matter what. All of that being said, I actually think this is going to be a one-sided game. I think Ohio State dog walks Notre Dame. I don't think it's going to be close. I think you're looking at a 10-point game. I think that spread, I'm taking Ohio State to cover the 8 points, and I feel pretty good about it. And I feel pretty good about it for a couple of reasons. Number one, we have talked about the fact that Ohio State has kind of had a resurgence of Will Howard. I have called it repeatedly the Will Howard You America Tour, because everybody wrote this cat off, and Will Howard has been doing nothing but being a dog in these playoffs. 289 yards and a touch in the last game. But I think what I really appreciate is that Ohio State, even with that being the case, even with Will Howard having been a dog in these last couple of games, I think what I appreciate the most is that it's not like Ohio State has gotten away from their identity, right? I go back to that Tennessee game, a 42-17 walk-off game in which Will Howard had 311 yards and a pair of touchdowns. Ohio State ran the ball 33 times in that game. I go back to the Buckeyes 41-21 win over consensus number one Oregon. Will Howard had 319 yards and three touchdowns. Ohio State ran the ball 31 times in that game. And then I go back to the 28-14 win over Texas. Now, they did run the ball fewer times in this game. Will Howard threw it 33 times in the game against Tennessee. Howard threw the ball 29 times. Against Oregon, he threw the ball 26 times. And against Texas, he threw it 33 times. Ohio State ran the ball just 24 times in this
also,
game.
Also, the Texas game was a much tighter game going into the fourth quarter.
Correct.
They were only up by a touchdown, I think, in the fourth until
they weren't.
Until the strip sack for a touchdown. It's been replayed probably 10,000 times.
Correct. And it's been replayed because Steve Sarkisian coached them out of a 21-21 game.
Mashup between Jack Sawyer and Captain Jack Sparrow. You should watch it. It's hilarious.
I'm already in. I like this because Ohio State has not lost their identity. They are still going to run the ball. You're going to see Judkins get 10 carries. You're going to see Henderson get 10 carries. You know they're going to design 3 to 5 carries for Will Howard. He's going to have another 3 to 4 scrambles. He's going to end up with 7, 8 carries. That has been the way that the Buckeyes have run the game. Henderson had 10. Judkins had 10 against Tennessee in the Oregon game. Henderson had 8. Judkins had 17 in that game. Will Howard had 5. They've kind of been in that territory against Texas. Henderson had 6, Judkins had 9, Howard had 7. So he had a couple of extra carries to make up for the couple they lost out of Henderson. I will say this is interesting to me. In these games, Judkins has had consistently more carries for way less yards than Travion Henderson. And I'm kind of working to figure that one out.
Well, Henderson got, I think you got to believe he got benched for a while in the last game because, he punched a guy in the face, then he disappeared for a while. Then when he got back in, he had that long run for a touchdown. But still, I mean, he was getting punished a little bit for that.
Against Tennessee, they both had 10 carries. Henderson had 80 yards. Judkins had 34. Against Oregon, Henderson had 8 carries. Judkins had 17. On 8 carries, Henderson had 94 yards. Judkins had 85 on 9 more carries.
Also, if you, if, I don't, if you watch the games, it seems like they're starting out with Judkins, and Judkins is getting all those carries. He's battering the defensive line for the other team, and then they bring in Travion Henderson, who's fresh, going up against a defensive line that's already been beaten up a little.
So, and there is an element of change of pace between these two guys, right? They're not crazy different. Judkins goes 6 foot 219. Travion Henderson goes 5'10", 208. So, I mean, you do definitely have the 10-pound heavier power back in Quinshon Judkins, the change of pace back in Travion Henderson. And I do think there is an element of how you're running these guys. Judkins, a guy that you're pushing up off the guards. Henderson's a guy you're working some more end-around stuff. You're split out wide stuff, etc. But all of that being said, the Buckeyes, regardless of where the numbers are going and who the carries are going to, they've done a pretty good job of kind of remaining true to the identity. And again, we've talked about this. One of the reasons I like Ohio State is that it seems to me there has been an awakening in Chip Kelly as a play caller. He looks a lot more UCLA Oregon Chip Kelly than he did earlier in the year, specifically, again, that Michigan game. And wherever that's coming from, Lonzo believes to some degree that Ryan Day has either taken over or become more involved in the play calling. I don't agree, and I don't agree for one reason. The offense that's being run right now looks very much more Oregon-UCLA than Ohio State has in a very long time.
Dude, I read you that article earlier, like in the week, where he said he's doing more. So he's definitely doing more.
Again, I'm not saying he's not doing more. I'm saying I don't think he's necessarily at the controls.
I believe that counts because I halfway, that's the first one of the week. It's not bad for either one of us. I believe that without Ryan Day getting more involved in the play calling, Ohio State would not be in this national championship game.
Maybe so, but I also, to some degree, believe that Chip Kelly's not a dumb person. Chip Kelly watched the Michigan game again just like we all did and figured it out. Oh, you know, if I just slam running backs into the teeth of a front seven like Michigan's, I'm going to lose. And Michigan's front seven was not as good as Tennessee's. I'd argue Michigan defensively, which was a pretty good team, on par with Oregon this year. I think he kind of knew what was coming there, and I got to give some credit to that. I like this Ohio State offense's ability to stay balanced, to stay consistent, but to have some wrinkles in there that they're having a hard time catching up with. All right, when we come back, let's talk about the other side of the ball. Let's talk about Riley Leonard and the Notre Dame Fighting Irish offense and see how they stack up against the Ohio State defense. That's next on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. The Rod Brown Show carries on. Rod, Lonzo, and you. Be a part of the show, 844-326-3663. You can text that number as well, 844-326-3663. Text that number. Let us know your thoughts on everything we are talking about so far this morning. We have talked quite a bit of NFL so far today, getting set up for the division round. We'll circle back around to that. I did get a DM during the break. Unfortunately, Rashad Beard has to push to tomorrow, so no Rashad today. We do have Lulu Kessin coming up here in the next segment at 8 o'clock straight up. We have Fight Club at 9 o'clock, ordinarily at 9:20. Got to bump it up to 9 o'clock today because Hayton S. Mario had an issue with scheduling. He will join us at 9:20 to break down the NFL's division around. But we are talking this AM. We are talking college football's national championship game. If you follow these sorts of things, ESPN's analytics give Ohio State a 55% chance of winning this game, Notre Dame a 45% chance of winning this game. Where does that number come from? That number comes from Riley Leonard. That to me is the equation. It is Ohio State's defensive front seven against Riley Leonard. We had SiriusXM College Football Overtime host Denton Day on yesterday. I ran by my theory by him. And he agreed with that theory. The theory is this is going to be, can Ohio State set the edge? Can Ohio State set the edge?
Is he the best quarterback they've faced in the playoff?
Riley Leonard?
Yeah.
I mean, Dylan Gabriel was a Heisman finalist. So I would say no. I will say this.
Quinn Ewers also? I mean, what's
I'm not a Quinn Ewers guy.
Okay.
By the way, he declared for the draft yesterday. Second round pick for me. Developmental pick for me. Like, Quinn Ewers has got a noodle arm.
I heard some people say that he's the number three quarterback right now coming out.
He's going to be, but I think that says more about the QB class than it does about Quinn Ewers, right? There are years being the third best quarterback overall is an accomplishment. And then there are years like this one where being the third best quarterback is really because there's only a couple of quarterbacks. I'm not a big Quinn Ewers guy. I think he's a bit noodle army. I think he can be panicked early. I think that part of the reason you guys knocked off Texas was because there were some spots where Quinn Ewers was under pressure off the edge and he freaked out a little bit. He panicked. I also think that there is a reason that Texas decided with the game on the line to kind of lean on Weissner and Blue a little bit, the two running backs. And I think it's because in those big spots, they didn't trust. And by the way, this does lead to questions about Arch Manning. Is he really the future? And I think it's fair to ask, is Arch Manning really the future? Or do we put this on Steve Sarkisian even more than we did before? Because there is some concept of, and this has been a conversation that's gone on around Clemson football for some time, about loyalty, right? About loyalty, you stay loyal to your guy no matter what. Were there spots where Arch Manning maybe would have, including the Ohio State game, where Arch Manning, who I think is much more Riley Leonard than Quinn Ewers is there a spot where it would have made sense to make the switch to Arch Manning and give yourself a little more versatility and adaptability? Guy with a little less experience, but a guy that can get outside of the pocket, can move with the football like Riley Leonard can a little bit. I will say that this is a quarterback in Ohio State that I think is much more dangerous as an up-the-gut runner than Dylan Gabriel. Gabriel's a guy that if he can get a little space, he's a little more shifty. Riley Leonard's not a guy that's going to get 4 yards up the football field, hit the B button, and drop a stutter step spin move on you that's going to, you know, knock a defender's jock strap off. Riley Leonard's the type of dude that's going to see a hole in the offensive line, recognize he's got nobody down the field. He's going to get through that gap. He's going to take the ball 4, 5, 6 yards up. He might run into contact. He might slide. But he's a guy who just wants to get his 4 or 5 yards on the ground, and that's it. He's not going to try to extend plays after that. But I do think he is, to me, a dude that has a little bit better court vision, if you will. He sees the pass rush, I think, better than Dylan Gabriel, and he responds to it with an up-the-gut run. I don't want to say he's a smarter runner than Dylan Gabriel. I think he just knows what his physical limitations are. He's quick. He's strong. He's a big, strong boy. But he also understands I'm not a guy that's going to get up the field, hit the stutter step, and juke a dude into the next week. I'm a dude that's going to get up the field, recognize where the end of the run is, get to it, go down. Or recognize, all right, I got one guy coming up. I got a safety coming up on me. I'm going to run through the contact on this one, pick up 2, 3 more. You have to stop him, however, from getting the edge. You have to create a world in which you make sure that Riley Leonard has two options. Stand in the pocket and deliver the football or run it between the guards. If I run it between the guards, I think Ohio State's got enough talent at the linebacker position to step up to the first level, to absorb the contact of Riley Leonard, and to limit him to. I think you got to keep Riley Leonard under 2 yards a non-sack carry, right? Any runs that are not sacks from Riley Leonard, I think you have to limit him to 2 yards or fewer per run. If you let him start to trickle up to 3.5, 4 yards a carry, now all of a sudden in those spots, second and third downs are going to start becoming shorter. Ohio State's got to get Notre Dame playing behind the sticks. Why? Because what I want to do, I want to turn Riley Leonard into a pure passer, and I want to create a world where Riley Leonard and the Notre Dame Fighting Irish are playing behind the sticks so that they cannot lean on Jeremiah Love, who is, I don't know that I would say he's the best running back you guys have played so far. Remember, he's a little dinged up, right? He's YOLOing his way through these playoffs on a busted wheel right now. I don't think he's the best running back you faced. I do think he's a very good running back. He's no worse than the second or third best one you faced. So what I need is to remove him from the game, and I need to create a world where Riley Leonard feels like he has to be Drew Brees, not Josh Allen. I need to create a world where Riley Leonard feels like he needs to be a pure pocket passing quarterback, not because that's his best game, but because he's playing from behind. The offense is regularly playing behind the sticks. I need to see a bunch of third and tens, third and nines. I can't be looking at third and two, third and three. Third and two, third and three, Riley Leonard being Riley Leonard puts you at a disadvantage. Third and nine, I feel a lot better. Dylan Gabriel's a guy on 39 that you go, if you get everything right and he sneaks out, he can get you nine. He can make a tackler or two miss and get nine. I don't feel that way about Riley Leonard. He's going to get you four, but if he's looking at a second and 10, if he's looking at a third and nine, a third and eight, Riley Leonard's legs aren't a big problem if it is third and nine, because he can get you fourth and sixth. He can get you fourth and five, but he doesn't strike me as a guy that if you keep getting him into third and long situations, he's a scary player like a Dylan Gabriel is. You know, like there are college quarterbacks. Kevin Jennings is one of these quarterbacks. Drew Aller's not one of these quarterbacks. It's part of the reason Penn State's at home on Monday night, because they kept getting behind the sticks when the defense pulled up, and Aller's not a guy that's sprinting out and getting you those yards. Neither is Riley Leonard. Riley Leonard can consistently be trusted to pick up three, four yards on a carry. Not a guy that I'm going to consistently trust to go get me 6-7 yards a carry. And if that's the case, then if I can put you behind the sticks more often than I don't, I got a good shot at winning this football game. I got a real good shot at winning this football game. In fact, out of curiosity, let's look at Riley Leonard in the games played so far. Take it back to that game against the Indiana Hoosiers.
I've noticed you stopped playing the...
Yeah, it's not as much fun when they're not playing anymore.
Okay, all right.
Against the Hoosiers, Riley Leonard averaged 2.7 yards per carry. Ran it back against Georgia, 23-10. The Irish win that football game. In that game, as my box score loads up, Riley Leonard ran the ball 14 times for 80 yards, an average of 5.7 yards per carry. You want to guess why Notre Dame won that football game as comfortably as they did? Because Georgia let Riley Leonard get over that three and a half yards per carry mark. We can take it back to the semifinal game against Penn State. Notre Dame wins a close game, a walk-off field goal set up by the Drew Aller pick on the last stretch. Riley Leonard in that game, Lonzo, ran the ball 18 carries for 35 times, 1.9 yards per carry, and a touchdown. That's why that game was close. Effectively, it comes down to this. If you let Riley Leonard average three or more carries per game, Notre Dame's winning pretty comfortably. If you keep him to 2.5 yards or fewer per rush, you win that game. To me, if I got to lock down a key to the game, it's Ohio State keeping Riley Leonard at 2.5 rushing yards or fewer. Do not let him be the reason that they are playing in second and shorts. Do not let him be the reason that third downs are less than 3 yards and now he's a threat to get them. Now you got to, because here's the thought. If it's third and nine And I'm not worried about Riley Leonard picking up 9 yards on a run. What does that allow me to do? Hey, that guy that's been spying on Riley Leonard, which I believe will be a feature of the Ohio State defense on Monday night, that guy that's spying on Riley Leonard, what can he do? Drop off into coverage. Cover that tight end up. Play middle thirds. I can now put an extra defender back knowing that if Riley Leonard takes off, even without a spy, I can get to him before it gets 9. But if it's 3rd and 2 and you got to have a stop, now what? Now I got to have a dedicated Riley Leonard run preventer. And if I have that guy, what does that mean? That means I got one less coverage guy to drop. That means I got to, instead of playing thirds across the middle of the field or quarters across the middle of the field, now I got to play a double wide. Now I got to play 2 backers with 1 walked up. Or now I got to drop from having a cover 2 with 4 underneath rushing 5. Now I got to have a cover 2 up top, thirds across the middle, and 1 guy who just watches the quarterback to make sure he doesn't cook us. Like that, to me, that is the game. The game comes down to, can Ohio State keep Riley Leonard in the pocket? So if he comes out and he throws for 350 and 3 touchdowns, you played a good quarterback led by a good coaching staff. But if he comes out and he runs for 50, 60, 70 yards in a touch, and he averages 3 yards per carry, that's how you lose this game on Monday. You've done pretty good. And as you pointed out, you got Captain Jack at the linebacker spot, who is about as physical and laterally quick as anybody in the game. I'm not super scared about it with the staff you have. The only thing that I truly believe, Great One, that screws you guys up in this game is if the defensive play calling goes by the wayside, is if you don't take advantage of having the athleticism. Notre Dame, by the way, missing their starting left tackle and maybe missing their starting right guard in this game.
See, my biggest concern is going back to Michigan play calling. If you go back to play calling like in the Michigan game, then you're probably in trouble.
I would agree with that, but I would say this. I think that, and again, am I being wildly optimistic here? Yeah, probably. But I think I would lean on, you didn't do that in the round of 16 or round of 12. You didn't do it in the round of 6. You didn't do it in the semis.
Texas was starting to look that way a little bit. It really was. I also wonder how you feel if it comes down to Will Howard in for the final play to win the game.
My man's been giving you 300 yards a game.
I know. But
granted, he's only been under pressure in that Texas game that one time, but he's given you 300 and a couple of tutties a game. It's hard to say I can't. If I'm Chip Kelly, I feel like Will Howard's earned the trust to go win the game. I feel like he's earned it. That being said,
I hope it doesn't come down to that. But if it does, I'm still going to have some concerns. He has stepped it up the last little bit. He's been pretty good the entire year.
These playoffs, the whole playoffs, yeah. He's been good. There were some spots in the regular season where you're like, that's a dumb mistake, right? Taking a slide with 3 seconds left on the clock in a winnable game. But in these playoffs, Will Howard, this is what I've consistently said. Playoff Will Howard's a different breed of cat.
But here's another problem also. Chips on your shoulder for almost the entire season, especially at the end of the season, because of their coach and because of other things. Do they need a chip to win? And if so, they don't have one for Notre Dame. They're picked to beat them.
Yeah,
can they handle that?
I don't know. Again, like this is one of those spots that I say on the radio
nervous fan finding all the angles why they could lose.
I say this on the radio all the time. If you've listened to the show for more than like 30 minutes, you've heard me say, I don't like to discuss intangibles. I can't quantify, does Ohio State need a chip on the shoulder to win? I don't know what that means. I'm not in that locker room. Like, I've heard that conversation on some of the, like, on the big national shows. They're like, you know, Ohio State doesn't really, they're not dogs anymore. Nobody's doubting them anymore. And I'm like, guys, have you been in the locker room to know that's what they've leaned on? Have you heard Ryan Day say, you know, I get the boys fired up.
Well, actually, you've seen Ryan Day and heard him say some things that would make you think that that's exactly what the deal is.
But again,
and there's been not a quiet anger, but just a flat out anger between the coaching staff and the players. Anytime you see them on the field, when they come, and especially Ryan Day,
I understand and I agree with all that. But what I'm saying is, you don't know that's where that's coming from. I played for coaches in the past.
You don't know that it's not.
I agree, but that's why I said I don't talk about the intangibles because we can't know this.
I can't quantify.
A chip on their shoulder and go, that's worth 10 points.
I'm coming at this from a fan perspective. I was born and reared and whatever an Ohio State Buckeye fan, grew up in the shadow of, I mean, the stadium's right down the street from me. I can't come at this from any other angle but as a fan. As
sure,
far as
I get that.
My team is in the national championship. I'm going to look for all the reasons why that they could lose while believing more than anything that they're going to win.
I think that is fair. I don't have a dog in the fight, and even if I do, I'm very good at taking off the fan cap and putting on the host cap. That's my job. That's what I'm paid to do. Here's what I'm going to say. What I'm going to say is I'm not going to sit here and try to speculate on what's going to happen in the game based on the emotion of guys I've never met in a locker room I've never been in that has restricted access to it. I don't know about that. What I do know is what I've seen on the football field. What I do know is playoff Willie H is a different breed of cat. What I do know is play calling of Chip Kelly, no matter what level Ryan Day is involved at, Chip Kelly as a play caller has been on a different level in this postseason. And number three, that linebacker core Ohio State has, this game's on them. Keep Riley Leonard in the pocket, you're fine. Keep him under 3 yards of carry, you're fine. Don't do that, you lose. That's the game to me. We'll talk more Natty as the show rolls on. We'll talk with Lulu Kessin of the Greenville News when we come back. We'll all listen to Lonzo do this Sports Flash now.
South Carolina Gamecocks dropped a close contest to Vanderbilt on the road, 66-63. Gamecocks shot over 42% from the floor and allowed Vanderbilt to shoot 41%, but with 11 more attempts and 5 more three-point attempts, the Gamecocks turned the ball over 25 times, and if you do that, you're probably going to lose. After a semifinal exit from the college football playoffs, Texas quarterback Quinn Ewers has elected to enter the NFL draft. No, I don't know if he's still a deputy. Ewers went 21-5 as a starter with 2 semifinal appearances, leading the only 2 Longhorn wins in the playoff format, and exits with a 9,128 yards and 68 touchdowns. That is not bad. Tune in this Saturday at 4:30 as the Furman Paladins take on the Chattanooga Mocs. It's Furman versus Chattanooga right here on your home for Furman Paladins basketball. The Fan, Upstate.